It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
This is my top priority in the Senate. I love the tax bill. I think the tax bill will make an important difference for the country. But when the winds, the political winds shift, we never leave taxes alone. When we did comprehensive tax reform 30 years ago, it lasted 4 years. What I want to do is make a lasting contribution to the country. And by appointing and confirming these strict constructionists to the courts who are in their late 40s or early 50s, I believe working in conjunction with the administration, we're making a generational change in our country that will be repeated over and over and over down through the years. Well, we're going to continue to confirm judges all year. You know, the Congress doesn't stop with the elections. It goes until the end of the year. We're going to do 6 more next week, which will bring us to 21. I'm processing them as quickly as they come out of the Judiciary Committee, and the administration is sending them up rapidly. I don't know what the final number is, but my goal, Hugh, is to confirm all the circuit and district court judges that come out of committee this calendar year.
That was Majority Leader Senator Mitch McConnell talking with Hugh Hewitt on his radio program. He went on to say that if necessary, he would keep the Senate in session through New Year's Eve as long as they have to fight to get these nominations in order. The problem is, the words maybe don't comport with the actions, and that's what I want to talk about today. There is a new website called Make Congress Work Again, and that's the title for a reason. As it turns out, the Senate especially is producing precious little work product for all the bragging of Mitch McConnell in that clip. Well, what is the truth here? Is he really pushing to get nominees out? Is it the Republicans' fault? Is it the Democrats' fault? What's happening in Congress, both houses, that nothing seems to be getting done, or precious little? I've asked Wesley Denton to join me. Wes is the former communications director for Senator Jim DeMint, who was a champion to so many of us, and now he is with the Conservative Partnership Institute, still working with former Senator DeMint, and I've asked him to join us. Good morning, Wes. Thank you. Thank you for your time this morning already.
Andy, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You know, I am. Let's just start with judges. There's no question that Senator McConnell has had some accomplishments. We have a good Supreme Court justice in Gorsuch. He certainly did push that through, and there have been some good nominees. But do you think that his description of Hugh Hewitt is an accurate one on what he's accomplishing on judges?
Well, they're certainly moving forward on judges at a decent pace. The problem is that judges aren't the only nominees pending before the Senate. The president just made mention over the weekend, he has over 300 nominees to presidential appointed positions waiting confirmation, 300. And if they're going to keep up this pace of doing 4 to 6 nominees a week, he won't get all of his nominees confirmed by the time he leaves office. And so, you know, a lot of people are worried about the deep state in the swamp and former Obama holdovers holding key positions in the Trump administration. The reason for that is because Trump can't get his nominees through the Senate, and there seems to be no sense of urgency. Now, on the judges, they're doing a decent job on that, but they could do a much faster job. And in fact, they're often not forthcoming about the true information about how they're working on the judges. For instance, you just heard in that clip, Senator McConnell said, we're getting 6 judges confirmed this coming up week. Well, guess what? They did 2 judges last night. Those 2 judges were Durbin appointees. and they were passed 91 and 90 to nothing with no Democrat opposition because they're Democrat appointees. So taking credit for putting Democrat judges into the circuit court, and I'm not sure why we're doing that anyway, but why they're spending precious time on that when they can't get Trump's nominees through makes little to no sense.
It doesn't make, and just to clarify what you just said, because you and I are just, some of these terms and people are common to us, but you're saying Senator Dick Durbin's pick, who was a nightmare senator from my home state of Illinois, his picks for judicial nominees, two of them got through, and there's bragging being done about getting judicial nominees through, and that's not the thing about which we should be bragging. Really, Wes, why would they pass through Durbin's nominees? Why would they do that? Why would they do that at voting 91 in favor?
This often happens through different presidential administrations that for key boards that have presidential appointees, they'll agree to do one Democrat appointee for every two Republicans to keep somewhat of a balance, even though there's a majority of the party in power on that appointed board. And sometimes they do this with judicial courts as well. They'll do mostly majority, but they'll do some minority as a as an olive branch to the minority. I don't know what the Democrats have done to deserve an olive branch. They've obstructed every single nominee that's come down the pike, and it's really frustrating. You heard what the Senate Majority Leader said in that clip, or I think you had said that he made the promise, and I've heard it as well, that we'll stay in through New Year's Eve. Well, how about staying in to a Friday? We don't need you to fight after the election when it's possible to lose the House and possibly even lose Senate seats. We want you to fight now when you have the majority and you have the ability to get things done. Why are they keep coming in on Monday night and then they leave on Thursday afternoon, and they basically work 2.5 days a week and they're not getting all the work done. They should stay in every weekend, every holiday, get the president's nominees passed, get the spending bills done, fund the border wall, and people are frustrated.
Yeah, let's reiterate that. They come in on Monday night, but they don't go to work. What, they come in at noon on Tuesday and work and then leave at noon on Thursday, something like that, right?
That's right. They have what we call a bed check vote in the Senate on Monday nights, where it's a non-controversial vote, like last night, the two Democratic judges that were obviously going to pass. They could have done it by UC, but they had a vote on it so that people would know that they need to be back in town on Monday night, but a lot of people still don't come back in until Tuesday morning. And then they have their final votes Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon, and then they leave for the weekend, and they usually have 4-day weekend. And what's frustrating is you turn on the TV during the week, during Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, what you'll see is the presiding officer of the Senate calling the roll. You know, like you're in homeroom class in grade school, where they're just calling off names to see if people are in attendance. That's called a quorum call. And they're actually not doing any work on the Senate floor. They're not passing nominees. They're not debating legislation. They're not holding amendments. They're just wasting floor time until they have a cloture vote that's been agreed to between McConnell and Schumer. There's no debate on the border wall. There's no debate on stopping Planned Parenthood funding. There's no debate on ending catch and release. There's no debate on the Iran deal and or on fixing our trade policies. They're just wasting time.
So you're saying the time that they're even claiming that they're working, they're not working. You're talking about the 2.5 days?
Yeah. If you know, anybody turn on C-SPAN. Sometimes there's some person giving a floor speech every now and then with an empty floor with no senators in attendance except one or two. But for the most part, they're in what's called a quorum call, which is a way to, quote unquote, be in session without actually doing any business. And it's a bit of a, if you've ever tuned in and you hear them calling the names very slowly, like one name per 15 minutes, that's because if they got through all of the names and the quorum wasn't in attendance, they would have to send the sergeant at arms to the police, basically the Capitol Police, to bring senators to the floor, because the Senate's supposed to be always debating. And so that's a trick of the majority in power to eat up floor time, is to just call the roll very slowly. So that's what they do. That's probably about 70-80% of what they do during the week is call the roll.
Meanwhile, Senator McConnell's bragging about getting nominees through. It really is pretty appalling. Also, we have not talked about the breaks they've been taking. They took a long Easter recess, and then what, 2 weeks ago or 10 days ago, they took another 10 days off, and that happened to take place, that break, during the Kentucky Derby, as I understand it. Is that right?
That's right. So they, whenever the Congress takes recesses, they always try to time it to an actual holiday, like an Easter break or Christmas break or a Jewish holiday or the 4th of July or George Washington's birthday. So they just took a 10-day break. They took a full week off in the weekend from Thursday to the next Tuesday with a week in between. And, you know, the only holidays there were Cinco de Mayo and then maybe the Star Wars, May the 4th. So, you know, asking around the staff, they said that in the Senate staff that the reason they took the recess was because of the Kentucky Derby from the majority leader's home state. I don't know if that's 100% true or not, but it's the only much celebrated event during that entire recess.
It's just, it's really shocking. But it has to be said, and I don't think it's said enough, Wes, and so that's why I've asked you to join me today. Let me just tell you that there is a website, makecongresswork.org, makecongresswork.org, where you can go on and sign it. I've certainly signed it, and it basically says, we, the undersigned, are sick and tired of secret bills that nobody reads, obstruction of presidential nominations, reckless special interest spending and debt, constant government shutdown drama, and too many vacations with too little work. Congress should delay August recess until government funding legislation has been openly debated in the House and Senate with a full opportunity for votes on amendments and is approved by both houses and sent to the president. And the Senate should delay August recess until sufficient progress has been made confirming the president's nominees. Now, let me just say, there are a ton of people that have signed this, also a group of conservative leaders that have signed a letter to Congress demanding such. Any response to that letter, Wes?
Yeah, I think now not response from the leadership of either house, but we've had over 16 senators to date, led by Senator David Perdue of Georgia, have basically crafted their own letter to Leader McConnell based off of that pledge. And they have said, we'd be willing to stay here and work weekends, work holidays, and not leave Washington until we get the president's nominees passed and we get the spending policies done that we promised in the last election. And that includes people that are up for election that have a reason to go home and campaign, like Senator Dean Heller or Deb Fischer or Ted Cruz, who have real races back at home, but they're saying, we'd rather be here and get the policies done. There's no reason for us to keep adjourning every weekend. So we are seeing momentum. I think there's an effort being built up in the House. And so we're very hopeful that there will be some change, but there won't be change without people hearing it or members hearing it from their constituents.
We only have a couple of minutes before the break, Wes, but I'm curious because if a Republican, probably if Mitch McConnell were sitting here, which he probably will not ever sit with me because he knows I'm not a big fan, he would say, hey, it's the Democrats. They're obstructing. They're demanding, 36 hours debate on each candidate, each judicial candidate. And you just don't understand. We don't. Senator McCain is not in with us, and we don't have. We have a very thin margin, and so there are a lot of reasons. Would that be a reason why these judicial nominees and other nominees are not getting through?
Well, certainly the Democrats are obstructing, but one of the reasons they continue to obstruct at a record pace is because they face no blowback for it. There's been no punishment for them or any pain been inflicted on them for having done this. It's just basically a gentleman's agreement between McConnell and Schumer. Okay, you choose to obstruct, we'll allow you to obstruct. They haven't really pushed back on it. What they could do and what they
have
Wes,
done to hold that thought. Hold that thought, because I'm going to have you talk about what they could do on the other side of this break, if that's okay.
You got it.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, you know, there are real consequences. There are real consequences to you and I, American citizens, for this dereliction of duty in the Congress, and it's happening in the House as well in a different way. I want to turn to that as well, but stay with me. Wes Denton is my guest. Again, the website is makecongresswork.org. Makecongresswork.org. Go and sign it. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Late today, after a discussion with Speaker Paul Ryan and Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, President Trump signed off. Press Secretary Sarah Sanders saying the president supported the bill because it includes more funds to rebuild the military, such as the largest pay raise for our troops in a decade, more than 100 miles of new construction for the border wall, and other key domestic priorities.
You waited through the snow, huh?
Congress didn't have time for a snow day with the clock ticking to finish up a $1.3 trillion spending package.
I'm proud to announce it will meet a number of vitally important objectives.
Some of the final pieces put the puzzle together, including $2 billion in new money for school safety measures, a bipartisan proposal tightening up background checks for firearms purchases, and $1.6 billion for the president's border wall. There's also $4.7 billion to address the opioid epidemic. Republicans succeeded in keeping Obamacare stabilization money out of the deal, and President Trump gets a win on keeping the Gateway Tunnel project between New York and New Jersey from being given priority status. But lawmakers were steamed about how the deal went down. Louisiana Senator John Kennedy told Fox, quote, "I think the whole process sucks. I think whoever designed this isn't qualified to run a food truck." And he's not alone.
Well, it's $1.3 trillion in spending, and you have four people deciding. And it's not a good way to do business, and I hope we can do it better in the future because it's just designed. It's not very transparent.
A former House budget chair blasted the Senate for creating a mess.
We passed the budget here in this House. We passed appropriation bills. It is the Senate that cannot get their act together. And then we come to this place where we do this huge spending bill that has not been negotiated between the House members and the Senate members, but just a small group of people.
Top Democrats signaled some relief that in the final hours, the impasse seems to have broken.
I don't believe we're going to have a shutdown. I think if necessary, God forbid, a continuing resolution. But I'd like to see it completed this week.
That was Mike Emanuel, and that was probably about 6 weeks ago, and that was when the $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill was passed by the Senate and passed to the president who signed it. It was a boondoggle for Democrats, and yet you heard Mitch McConnell talk about how proud he is of it. How is it that we continue to have these major, massive spending bills passed by a Republican Congress? They're even now proud of it. And they tell us that if they can't pass it, the government will shut down. There's no discussion, no debate about the issues. And then it's kind of like Nancy Pelosi said, we find out what's in it after they've signed it. Wes Denton is my guest. And Wes, of course, is with a Conservative Partnership Institute, which is an entity founded by former Senator Jim DeMint. And he's also been a big part in establishing this website, which is makecongresswork.org. makecongresswork.org. So, Wesley, we have this, just for instance, $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill. How does that relate to what we've been talking about? Congress not, let's talk about the Senate, not working and not operating the way they should be. How is that contributing to this mess of a bill?
Well, I think what you've seen is what that did, the omnibus spending bill, was wake up the White House to what's really going on. They've been giving a lot of leash to the Congress, hoping that they get the agenda done legislatively. They had been taking their word that the spending bill was going to include the president's priorities. And then what you saw was they jammed the president. It was a secret deal with Schumer, Pelosi, McConnell, and Ryan and their staff in the room. It didn't go through committee. It didn't have debate. It didn't have any opportunity for amendment on the floor. It was passed at the last minute, and they told the president, sign this or shut down the government. And we did some decent wins in it, but I'm sorry, we couldn't get the border wall. We still had to fund Planned Parenthood, and we had to spend egregiously on liberal policy priorities. But if you don't do this, the government's going to shut down. It's going to be a fiasco. And that's what angered him. And he said, I will never again sign a bill like this. He feels like he had been had, and he has demanded no more omnibuses, no more last-minute spending deals. And that's what this push is really trying to support the president and is all about, something that conservatives have been saying for some time, which is why all these fake last-minute fights when we know these deadlines are coming up, we know the policies that we want. Why aren't our leadership and our committees working on this months in advance and allowing a full debate and giving the president an opportunity to sign it or veto it if it's a bad bill? And so that's the intent here, is to say, let's not go through the spooky theater again. Let's not have these fake fights of, we forgot to do the spending until the last minute. We know we have to do spending. It runs out at the end of September, so they should finish their spending before they go home for August break. And if they don't fund the government before August break, then they haven't done their job and they shouldn't go home. And that's what these 16 senators led by David Perdue, including Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and others, are saying in the Senate. And that's what over 90 conservative leaders signed this letter that's at makecongresswork.org. And they're saying no more of this. We have to have, this is what we've always been told would be conservative nirvana for policy, which is as long as if we just get the House and the Senate and the presidency, we can get our policy through. But instead, what we saw in February with the omnibus bill is with a Republican House and Senate and White House, we got a Democrat spending bill. How did that happen?
And the second time. It's the second time since President Trump was elected that this has happened. You know, Wes, I guess the question, and you don't know the answer, I doubt, but still interesting to discuss, is this just laziness on the part of Republican leadership for all the reasons we described, all of the breaks they're taking, the short work weeks, or does it comport to their agenda?
It's a number of things. I think in truth, unfortunately, there are a lot of Republicans that just don't believe in the Republican platform, and they will run as conservatives but govern as moderates or liberals and be just fine with that, and they're more concerned with power than policy. But you also have just a general, they want to go through the easiest way possible, the least pain. And so the easiest way possible is what they're doing now, which is very little, and just blaming the Democrats. That's easy. But what's more difficult is to lead your caucus and fight for them to stay in town, to fight against the Democrats and suffer the mocking of the liberal media press and to push through and to get these priorities done. The interesting thing is, and you and I have seen this for years, they keep saying there's nothing they can do. They can't speed things up. Our hands are tied. But when a conservative wants to have a conservative policy debated or brought up on the floor, or he tries to extend the time, suddenly they find it within the rules to squash him. So in the omnibus is a great example. They keep saying, well, we can't stop the Democrats. They hold all the power here, and they can delay. But when Rand Paul tried to filibuster the spending bill back in February, he was shut down after an hour of debate, even though technically there were supposed to be 30 hours of debate. And the reason is because conservatives have been saying this on the judicial fight, the 30 hours of debate is a maximum that is allowed to the minority to obstruct. It's not a minimum. And they're supposed to only use those 30 hours if they're speaking on the floor and multiple members have to come down at one-hour intervals. And so Rand Paul was leading a one-man filibuster, so he came down to the floor at midnight and spoke for 1 hour. And after his hour was up, they voted on the bill. And they didn't give him UC like they do to the Democrats in the judicial fight to carry out 30 or 29 other hours of floor time. And so we've seen this. They shut down Rand after an hour. Why won't they shut down the Democrats who aren't even coming to the floor to make cases against these nominees? They're just making agreements to waste 30 hours of time. And so it's very frustrating.
It is frustrating. All right, so we have sort of fleshed out what's happening with judicial nominees languishing, and then nominees like Senator Dick Durbin's leftist judges getting through with 91 votes. That's not Mitch McConnell's fault, but he is calling for the vote and getting them through quickly. But let's talk about something you mentioned, but we didn't really sit on it very much, and that was the nearly 300 presidential nominees. You know, I know, Wes, that there are some really key positions, for instance, at the Justice Department. I think the Civil Rights Division. Terrible appointees sitting there, hundreds, if not thousands of people put in place by the Obama administration, still doing. They're doing whatever they're doing behind closed doors to undermine this president. And these nominations are languishing. I just gave an example. Give us another example of what's not being done because they're not getting the nominations through.
Well, I mean, I think probably the best example that we've had over the last year of it's not just the Democrats and that are obstructing was Russ Vogt over at the Office of Management and Budget at the OMB. Russ Vogt is a very respected conservative leader. He's a budget expert. He has worked on at the House and the Senate for over a decade. He was a leader at Heritage Action, and he was appointed by President Trump to be the number two in command under Mick Mulvaney at the OMB last April. His nomination was delayed until just 2 months ago, I believe, in February or March, when he finally passed. Almost a full year passed before he was confirmed. And the reason wasn't because of Democrat obstruction. The reason was Senator John Cornyn of Texas. He made it very clear he was holding Rust to get more money for hurricane relief in Texas. Now, that may be his prerogative to do, but this has happened with Cory Gardner on personal legislative fights in Colorado with Trump judges. And this has happened in a number of different places where Republicans are obstructing the president's nominees. And what ends up happening is there seems to be no passion amongst this Senate and this Congress to defend and fight for this president. And we all know how they all felt about the campaign, and they tried to keep their distance, and they've tried to make amends since the election. But it seems some personality differences and just people being overly cautious and refusing to work together to get the common good done for conservative policies and conservative nominees, that's not winning out. And unfortunately, it just seems to be some personal grievances and some just laziness on the part of this Congress.
You know, which brings me to this point, which I make almost every morning, Wes, and that's why the midterms are so important. We really, 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 really need to clean House and Senate. We need to clean them and make sure we get serious, committed conservatives in those seats. And by the way, makecongresswork.org is that website, makecongresswork.org. We only have just a few minutes left, Wes, but let's just at least touch on the House. We've talked a lot about the Senate not working, but how does the House compare then? Are they working?
Well, they've been doing better, obviously. I mean, the House has different rules. The minority is not allowed to obstruct indefinitely in the House, but the House has not used their full power of the majority as they could have. And I think one of the best examples of that is what we're dealing with now in immigration. The head of the Committee of Jurisdiction, Congressman Goodlatte, produced a pretty decent immigration bill last year that included all the president's priorities on ending catch and release, ending chain migration, building the border wall, and made some concessions on DACA that a lot of us may not be comfortable with, but it went through committee. It never came to a vote on the House floor. Leadership never brought it to a vote. They kept negotiating with the Democrats. So I don't know why, after Republicans have the majority and the Republicans put a bill through the committee, it never came to the floor. Now we find out that in the middle of the election year, instead of getting the spending done and the nominees done in the Senate, the House is considering allowing a discharge petition on a full-out amnesty bill that doesn't just deal with the DACA recipients, but expands it to millions of others. That could actually come to a vote on the House floor. And now you can't stop people from signing a petition per se. With discharge petition, what that is the ability of people not in leadership to say that we have 218 votes, the majority, that want a bill to come to the floor. What they are actually discharging is a rule, called a Queen of the Hill rule. And the way they're trying to be a little cute about this is saying, look, we're not saying we want to pass amnesty. We're saying we want to have a Queen of the Hill strategy where we put four bills on the floor and we can have an enforcement-only bill, we can have a DACA-only bill, we can have a fuller amnesty bill, and we can have another bill. And everybody can have their say, but whatever bill gets the most votes is the one that wins out and goes to the Senate. Well, we all know with all of the Democrats and a handful of moderates that they could probably get the most votes for an amnesty bill, and that's what it's designed to do. Now, the leadership is not helpless in this. They would have to twist arms of more liberal members and tell them they would lose their committee seats, so they would lose funding from the party organizations for reelect if they do this, because it would hurt the party and it's the wrong policy and it's against the Republican platform. But to date, there's been no punishment for moderates that are trying to push this amnesty bill on the floor. So, you know, it's happening on both sides. Unfortunately, we should be focused on the priorities that people got elected on, but we still seem to get locked up in these liberal policy debates.
Yes, and it seems the worst spin on it to me, Wesley, is you have Mitch McConnell bragging about all he's doing on judicial nominations and bragging that he's going to keep them in session, you know, through New Year's Eve if he has to get them through. But we know full well that while he actually could do something, now he's giving them taking tons of vacation, working 2.5 days a week. Meanwhile, we have Paul Ryan, who claims he's not in favor of this bill that will make DACA amnesty a reality, and yet he's doing nothing, practically speaking, to stop this discharge petition. The hypocrisy is tough to take, and that's why we're asking you to go to this website, makecongresswork.org, makecongresswork.org. And by the way, don't forget to vote in these primaries. That's the best thing you could possibly do. Wesley Denton, again, we thank you so much, Wesley, a Conservative Partnership Institute, always, for your expertise.
Thank you, Sandy. God bless you and your listeners.
Yeah, same to you. All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Voting begins today for the primary runoffs. Democratic candidates for governor Andrew White and Lupe Valdez both want to face Governor Abbott in November. The 21st Congressional District is also up in the air. Last year, Lamar Smith announced he would retire. Chip Roy and Matt McCall are both vying for the Republican nomination. Mary Street Wilson and Joseph Kopser are running on the Democratic side.
Okay, well, that was a short report from KENS in Texas. But the point is, for all of you down there in Texas, there is a big race, a runoff election this coming Tuesday, May the 22nd. And so as we have been covering the primaries and trying desperately to get you involved, begging you not to stay home, because so much is at stake. We're going to continue now with our discussion of what's going to happen in Texas next Tuesday, May the 22nd. In Texas 21, interesting race, you just heard the KNS announcer, however briefly, mention Texas 21, which is a pretty interesting race. Lamar Smith was the sitting congressman who stepped aside for whatever reason. And so in the wake of that, now this is Austin, Texas, Travis County, a good chunk of what Texas calls the Hill Country. And so there were, I think, 17 candidates to begin with in this race. And now the runoff pits two people against each other, and they are Matt McCall and Chip Roy. And I've asked Chip Roy to join us again this morning. Chip, you may remember, worked with the Texas Public Policy Foundation as their vice president of strategy. He also was the first assistant attorney general under Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, and he was the chief of staff for Senator Ted Cruz. And he joins us this morning. Chip, thanks for joining us.
Sandy, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's really great to be on. Thanks for what you do to get good information out to the public.
Chip, as I understand it, Matt McCall is also a conservative, and you guys recently debated. And so I'm thinking that you probably, as much as anyone, know the differences between you and Matt McCall. Can you say what those are?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, first of all, this is a great Hill Country district in the center of Texas, stretches from Austin down to San Antonio and all the way out through Fredericksburg and beautiful Hill Country. And I'm a proud Texan, and I think we need to have a strong conservative representing this district in Washington to help the president get his agenda through. And right now we've got a Congress that is too often standing in the way and not helping. And we've gotten a lot of great things accomplished. It was what a wonderful blessing to have Jerusalem fully recognized yesterday with the opening of our embassy in the United States. It was long overdue, and I was so proud to see that happen. And there's so many other great accomplishments, circuit court judges, tax bill getting through, getting us out of the disastrous Clean Power Plan. I mention all of that because those things have been great accomplishments, but imagine how much more we could do if we had a Congress that was willing to lead and that you could count on to send good bills to the president's desk instead of hiding and sending us fake Obamacare repeal bills and not doing their job. And that's why I'm running. And the core distinction between me and my opponent is simply this. I know what I stand for, and more importantly, and this is the difference, you can know what I stand for based on what I've accomplished, what I've done. You don't have to wonder what I've done for conservatism, what I've done to fight for constitutional principles. I've spent a good chunk of my career doing that, whether I was in the private sector or in the public sector. And you know that I'll stand up for amnesty because I've done it, stand up against amnesty because I've done it, that I'll stand up for Second Amendment rights because I've done it. And, you know, as my opponent found out when he went on Mark Levin's show last Friday, he was asked the question, what have you done for conservatism? And literally it was crickets on the radio show because he just really hasn't in his life.
So in your mind, the difference is the fact that you've actually, it's not just what you've said, it's actually what you've done. Let me just say that Chip Roy has been endorsed by Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, Texas Right to Life, Congressman Louie Gohmert, the Club for Growth, and also talk show host Mark Levin. And McCall, meanwhile, is a local personality that people know. He ran against Congressman Lamar Smith twice before, was not successful in those bids. Mike McCall is endorsed by Fredericksburg Tea Party and a number of members of the San Antonio business community. So, but interestingly enough, a lot of your positions are the same. It's certainly true, Chip, that almost every Republican serving in the Republican conference in Washington claims to be a conservative. They all claim that. And if right now in this election cycle, they all claim they're friends of Donald Trump. It's pretty amazing. But it isn't always true. It just isn't always true, and the proof is, in fact, in the pudding. How do you think that you are being received in your district? What's your sense of, my understanding is this going to be a close race. Do you feel that way also?
I think we've had tremendous enthusiasm in the district, and we're feeling very good heading into the election. Now, you always run, a careful race to make sure that you get the votes out. As runoffs, you have to get the votes to show up, right? Because it's not a regular election date. But we feel great about it. We've got local leaders throughout the district that have supported us. Susan Narvaez, the former mayor of San Marcos, the Austin Tea Party, the San Antonio Tea Party, the Pastor Greg Young, he's a radio host in Kerrville, local activists that are extraordinary leaders throughout the district. Ellen Trockler on the Austin City Council, the Comal County District Attorney. I could go through a list those are off the top of my head. You go to my website and you'll see a long list of great supporters throughout the district who are excited about somebody that they can trust on day one to step in and fight for them. And they won't have to wonder what will happen when I get to Congress. And that there's a reason why Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan, Louie Gohmert, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee have endorsed me, because they want somebody they can trust to sit in the trenches with them and to fight the establishment and to make sure that we send good legislation to the president. And the folks on the ground here, extremely enthusiastic about that, knowing that they can have somebody who can start on day one ready to do that for them and to represent the people of this district and of the state of Texas, as I've done in numerous capacities, as you mentioned, whether it was Senator Cruz's chief of staff, an advisor to Governor Perry, or the first assistant attorney general.
You know, Chip, everybody knows Austin because of music. Because they watch Austin City Limits, by the way. The notorious reputation of Austin is that it's extremely liberal. It's the blue part of Texas. It's pretty curious to me that that particular seat that you're running for has remained in Republican hands. But what does it look like now, just in terms of the landscape? Forget about any kind of opponent, but for either Republican candidate, what is the landscape like now in your district, District 21, for conservative candidates?
Well, if you'll keep in mind that the district has parts of downtown Austin which are very blue, as Governor Perry used to refer to it, the blueberry in the tomato soup, is Travis County, is Austin, Texas, in the middle of bright red Texas. But the Hill Country and Bear County, north part of San Antonio, and Comal County, where New Braunfels is, and throughout the entirety of the district, it is a very conservative district. These are conservative Texans who are very committed to wanting to get the federal government out of their lives, to secure our border and build the wall, to ensure that we can make the tax cuts permanent, to get our hands around our national debt that is exploding, to make sure that our men and women in uniform get the tools that they need to fight for us and defend us, and that our veterans are taken care of when they get home. These are the things, in addition to protecting our fundamental rights and our religious liberties and our ability to live according to our conscience at home. These are the things that matter to the people in this district. You know, Austin's a great city and a fun place. My wife's in my first date was a Willie Nelson concert at Stubbs Barbecue. We go see live music throughout the district, Green Hall, and, you know, Lyle Lovett, and all the great places here that it has to offer. But this is a conservative district, and it represents the values of Texans as a whole, and particularly the values that I know that I've been fighting for throughout my career.
Chip, when in 2016, I will never forget the millions of dollars and the personnel that were hired to go down and turn Texas blue. And I'm confident that still, at least some people are still working at that. What progress have they made, do you think?
Well, I think that you always have to take seriously when you've got that many resources being devoted towards that effort. And so then you know that they're moving the needle some. We had a million Democrats who showed up in March in the primaries, which is the first time Democrats cracked a million. But here's the good news. Republicans had 1.5 million people show up. It is still a very bright red state, and I think that the stories of a big blue wave are overstated, but they're only overstated. And this is important. They're only overstated if conservatives make sure that we choose good candidates, good conservative candidates that you can count on to win the election, and number two, that we show up in November and do our job. And it's important that we have people who will run campaigns that will mobilize and excite voters to show up in November, so that we can prove that this blue wave is a bunch of hype and not the real deal. But we have to take it seriously. We have to recognize how much focus and energy the Democrats have. Beto O'Rourke is challenging Senator Cruz, raised $6-7 million in the first quarter of this year. Extraordinary. The Democrat on in this seat in Texas 21, one of the two Democrats also in a runoff, raised, I think, $700,000+, a bunch of money in the first quarter. So there is enthusiasm, but we will win if we do our job. That's the bottom line. If we show up and we mobilize our voters, we will win.
All right, we're talking to Chip Roy, who is one of the Republican candidates in the 21st District. The point that I'm trying to make with all of you is that, please, I beg you to pay attention to these races. I don't care if you're not hearing them on Fox News or some of your outlets. These primaries, these runoffs, are absolutely crucial. If you want good people to serve in Washington, if you want to do your part to help drain the swamp, then you have to pay attention. I want to mention another race. This is Texas 5. I always say, and it's true, when I try to decide who to support, I look at who is supporting them as much as I look at what they say about themselves, and many times more. You know, we always, didn't your mother say to you when you were growing up, you can be judged by your friends? Well, that's certainly true. So let me give you something to ponder. This is Texas 5. There are two candidates, Lance Gooden. Pete Sessions is sitting Congressman Pete Sessions is endorsing Lance Gooden in the runoff against Bunny Pounds. By contrast, Louis Gohmert is endorsing Bunny Pounds. And this is what Congressman Gohmert says. This could be an incredibly close race. So for us to get this real conservative to Congress, we have absolutely got to have knowledgeable conservatives turn out on May 22nd, or Donald Trump will not get the help he really needs. The Dallas Morning News liberal editors, who find real conservatives like me to be deplorable, think Bunny's opponent is their kind of guy. I am proud to endorse Bunny and urge you to get to the polls during early voting on May 22nd. That's Louis Gohmert on behalf of Bunny Pounds, and Pete Sessions on behalf of Lance Gooden, and that is in Texas 5. What's at stake? We just have a couple of minutes left here, Chip. In your words, in your own mind, what's at stake in this 2018 midterm?
Two things. First of all, is that we make sure we send a strong conservative Congress to make sure that we give reinforcements to people who are fighting for us right now, the president who is getting things accomplished despite a Congress that is not doing its job, and the conservatives in Congress that are fighting to try to help the president and to make sure that we find ways to challenge the establishment, the status quo, or drain the swamp, as the president likes to say. That is the opportunity that's in front of us. It is a small window with an enormous opportunity. So we need to send good, strong conservative that you can trust on day one to engage immediately and not let this moment pass. The stakes are extremely high. We have moved the ball in the right direction, but we have a long way to go. We've got $21 trillion of debt. We do not have health care freedom. We have open borders still. We are not doing what we need to do to blow up the regulatory state in Washington as much as needs to happen, as quickly as needs to happen. The president needs help. Those are the stakes. We've got to take advantage of this opportunity right now and not let it slip by. And the second thing is we've got the duty to make sure that we send conservatives to Washington that we can trust and that you know that you can count on, and that will run a strong election this fall. We have too many candidates, including my opponent, who too often like to play it cute and try to take some shots at Republicans at their expense in order to gain favor to try to win votes from Democrats. That's not how you do it. You need to present a vision that will galvanize and build a strong conservative coalition. So when we get to Washington, we have a mandate and we can give the president what he needs to help bring this along.
All right, that's Chip Roy running for Congress in District 21 in Texas. And by the way, for those of you listening, remember, go to afaaction.net, afaaction.net. We have a great voter guide to help you decide, you know, where people stand on what issues, and you can vote accordingly. And I'm trusting that all of you listening to me will take this seriously. God bless each and every one of you. God bless you, Chip. Stay safe. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.